someone whispers. Girl! A woman stares at me from a cracked door. She opens it more, and I see it was the woman who watched me run from the burning house. She motions me toward her. I'm not sure why or how, but I find myself inside her house. I pull out my gun and point it at her. She flinches away. A man on the far side of the room looks away from his HC to see me, then looks back as it shows bodies falling over a city. Brea lies on their kitchen table. Her blood has been cleaned away and she's wearing a dress, her face surrounded by winter berries. It looks as if she is asleep. She is their daughter. Red Hand came a year ago, Brea's mother says, as I warm myself by their fire. Her name is Maeve. A young boy watches from a back room. Moved into the mine north of town. Started using the old base for transmissions and the mine up the coast as a redoubt. It was fine at first. Our gammas had already fled. But then the obsidians came and things got bad. More hands started showing up as the obsidians chased them north. So many hanging on by the thread of their bones. They've got a field outside the mine where they've done and buried thousands. Their men started fighting, started killing each other. Guess they thought they had nothing to live for. So then we was told they'd be taking wives of our clan. She stifles a sob. They took me baby. She was not on 13, too shy of wed age, but they took her still. Said Maura was too young yet, but her lips quiver. But they took her to the base anyway. They'll take her away. I sit in the chair feeling exhausted as Maeve tells me her tragedy. The rag I used to clean the blood from my arm languishes in a tepid bowl of water. The old soup she gave me doesn't steam anymore. I've not even lifted the spoon. Outside there's occasional gunfire or shouts. I cradle Ulysses in my arms. Maura, I ask, who is she? My youngest daughter. Not yet 12. She sobs. And you just let them take her, I say, watching Ulysses' dead face. After you knew what they did to Brea. What were we to do? The woman says. They'd kill us. There's hundreds up there in that mine. That man Cormac. He's a beast. Killed a boy who tried to... She shakes her head. He's dead now. My friend made sure of that. He ain't the worst of them. There's Picker, man that chooses the wives. He chose Brea, and now... She can't even say her youngest daughter's name. And there's the woman. Harmony. The woman nods and looks at Brea. They're rounding up new girls at the base. Gonna take them to the mine to be wives after they've been inspected. Said we helped the gold. And no one has tried to stop them, I say. You just watched. She convulses, sobbing. She tries to speak, to give another excuse. But then she looks at her girl and just runs back to the bedroom, to her other children. Fear lurks over this village. Maeve's husband looks at me now. The light from the HC bathes him sickly green. The colour is the only life in his eyes. You Gamma? Why did Gamma rape your daughter? I snap. His jaw flexes. Talk about my girl again. I drag you to the hand myself. How are you going to do that from your knees? I ask. He looks back at the HC, swallowing. Your last daughter ain't there, old man. I point out the window to the squat base on Promontory. She's over there. You can stay till dark, he says quietly. Then you go. In the dim light of the fire, I watch Ulysses' cold face as I watched that of my sister and her children. I pull the jacket over his face. I'm tired of watching. Through the walls, I can hear the whispers of the orb. That night, I dig through the rubble of Cormac's house as the snow comes down. The north wall has crumbled inward from the heat and the metal roof has warped. Coughing from the soot, I pull blackened timbers off the remains of the kitchen table. There, sitting by the stone frame of the hearth, lies Fig's black orb. Wrapping my hands in my sleeves, I pull it out and crouch in the remains of the house. Despite the heat of the fire, the orb is undamaged, as I suspected it would be. There is no lock, no hinges or any gaps in the metal to show where it opens. I tap it with a naked finger. It's cool to the touch, like river stone. I hold the orb in both hands, turning it over to figure out how to open it. Maybe it doesn't open. I rap it with my knuckles. Whatever is inside was worth Fig risking her life to get. It must contain something that can help me. If it's hollow, I can't tell, but if it's not, it should be heavier. I saw Volga break rocks on it, and Victor's razor slide off without leaving much more than a scratch. Fig seemed to be able to cool it with the implants in her fingers. Maybe I need those to open it. But if I need those, why would it call to me? I lower my head to it, hoping the proximity to the parasite in my head will open it. Nothing happens except the blood in my brain thumps louder. I lower the orb in frustration and lean back. Flakes of snow flutter down from the sky and gather on my face. I suck on the opened scabs on my hands and think, what do I do? What can I do? There isn't salvation in this orb. Even if there was, Volga and Victra are already dead. I drop my hands to the orb and consider defeat. The pressure in my head releases like a popping bubble. A low hum comes from my lap, and I look down to see an emerald green light appearing underneath a faint blood smear my thumb left on the orb. I sit up and wipe the soot from my eyes. The green light ripples in the black metal, becoming a swirl of tiny, arcane mathematical symbols that coalesce into the shape of a woman atop a bull. The image is no larger than my thumb. DNA sampling complete. New protocols implemented for Anatos Figment, a soft female voice says in my head. Or was it from the orb? Sphera access granted. My heart thuds as the orb purrs and its surface begins to unscrew till 1,000-millimeter-wide strips around its meridian are turning in alternating clockwise and counterclockwise rotations. They fold in on each other until the orb divides in two and folds over on itself, revealing an interior the colour of baby teeth pulsing with soft light. Built into the orb are several hundred small compartments marked with obscure symbols. A central device, made from the same material as the inside of the orb, is embedded in the bottom of the orb. It is the size of my thumb. A green light glows inside it, and I sense frequencies flowing between it and the parasite in my head, the same way I found Victra in the woods. Cortical implant diagnostic complete. A long list of green characters appears in the air in front of me. I reach out to touch them, but they aren't there. I swipe at them with my hand and they scroll downward. The list goes on and on, none of it making any sense to me. Figment functionality impaired. Seek repairs at the womb upon soonest convenience. Seek repairs? To a parasitic implant in my brain? Where the hell would I do that? Geolocation function unavailable. Mobile uplink unavailable. The parasite is reading my mind. What is the implant? A gift from Astarte. Who the hell is Astarte? She was you. What does that mean? No response. What is Figment? How do I get repairs? No response except a reminder to seek repairs. Bloody hell! Was the brown woman Figment, or is Figment the parasite? Was she being controlled by it? Am I? Could I be if I got repairs? If I can get repairs, someone out there must know. Does that someone control the parasite? Would they control me? Volga seemed to think Figment was just a woman, but Victra knew better. It doesn't make any sense, and right now I don't really give a shit. Apparently, I expected the orb to contain a rocket launcher or something. I prod through the supplies. Nothing is labelled in a language I understand, and each device is as inert and bizarre as the next. There are small blue discs set in gel, a black nasal inhaler with assorted cartridges, a silver device that looks like it goes around an eye with a tiny needle injector, a credit ring with Republic markings, a credit ring with Society markings, a credit implant with peculiar winged symbols, a case of 100 pebble-sized balls in different colours, a selection of iris implants in all 14 colours, a titanium sphere, vials of clear liquid, an armoury of coloured needles, a miniature pharmacy of life-takers or life-givers, take your gamble, passport implants which sprout eerie hollows of my face when I touch them, and 100 other items I can't begin to suss out the function for. But no bloody damn gun, no magical broomstick, no teleportation device, unless it's in one of the pills. No body armour, no universal comm, no grenades, no damn manual. Not one thing I could use to somehow become a hero. What does this shit do? I beg. Help me, please. The parasite does not reply. I hit my head, trying to jar its loose circuits. Come on! Implant functionality impaired. Seek repairs at soonest convenience. Fucker. Name-calling is a waste of neurons. Stupid parasite. Useless treasure. That's what Figment meant when she said Volga could use it. That I didn't deserve it. Tough shit. I'm all that's here. I rifle through the rest of the contents, determined to find something that will help me. I frown when I open a long compartment around the bottom ring of storage. I pull out a small, flexible magazine that looks like it would hold bullets or pills, but neither bullets nor pills fill the gel magazine. It is full of teeth. I start to laugh. I storm back into Maeve's home. She's lying in her daughter's bed, crying. She doesn't even bother to turn till I slam the door behind me. My eyes are bloodshot from smoke. My hair's a rat's nest. My pants are torn. I'm covered in soot and blood and carrying Figment's orb in a half-burned blanket. And I'm in no mood for the drunk bastard in front of his little HC or for the mother who hovered by the window chewing her nails like a frightened dumb goat as her daughter was raped across the street day after day. How long are those bastards going to be before they take the girls back to the mine? I ask. Told you to get, the husband says. I point my gun at his head. Shut your copper gob. I got business with your wife. He moves his mouth like a dumb mule and turns back to his HC, pretending to find the news program showing Republic ships gathering to fight the Obsidians for some reason or another to be more interesting than the muzzle of my gun. His wife stares at the wall as if trying to become it. Maeve! She doesn't reply. She smiles like she hasn't washed in years when I crouch by her. Maeve! She won't turn till I pull her ear. You want to see your Mora again? I ask. Do you want to see your baby girl? She looks up and nods. When do those bastards take the girls back to the mine? In the morning, she says. Inspection don't last that long, and they don't fly when the satellites are overhead. They'll keep... Her lips quiver like salted slugs. They keep the wives in the base until they pass. Beyond 10, usually. Then you got till daybreak to make me look pretty enough to drop a drill boy's jaw, I say. Can you do that? Give me a little blush, curl this nest. She smiles. Finally, this is something she knows. Little oil and an iron. I got one just behind the cupboard. Good, Maeve, good. And I'm going to need a pair of pliers. Small as you got. Chapter 68. Lyria.
Shh.
By morning, I'm schlepping over the frosted snow toward the base, trying not to limp for the pliers in my shoe. It's bright and blue out, and pretty enough for me to be pissed at the world for putting such a lovely face on such a shit-infested day. The sea lolls against the coast like a dancing grey lover. It spits little bursts of salt that coast up in the air and then drizzle down on my shiny curled hair. Maeve might be all closed up to a world that's beaten the hell out of whatever pretty dream she had for herself when she was freed from the mines, but she knows how to make an escapee from a genocide look like a dumb mine lass with rosy cheeks and flailing skirts and nothing to her knowing except how to coax fat-ass spiders into puking silk and how to get rust-blood drill boys spitting seed enough to populate a township. I stride down what counts as the main road for this whipped town, tucking my head like I've got something to hide. I got a bundle under my arm. It ain't the orb. I left that buried in the cinders, and Ulysses with Maeve. All I got is a bucket of salted fish from Maeve's pitiable larder, and enough ankle showing for the Red Hand butcher boys smoking burners in front of the old base to forget about their morning snort of grey line. They make like bees to me. No manners. They're conquerors. What they see is theirs, and they're wondering how the picker didn't already take his wife tax of me. They pester about, asking questions. I act all domestic and frazzled, careening about like I'm a drunk sparrow trying to find gaps in the trees. They pull my hands to see if I've a ring on. They hem me in and coax me into a smoke. I take a burner between my lips as one rests his hand on my ass, cupping inside the cheek, nearly where the magazine of teeth are secured by epoxy to my deeper parts. I act timid, like I can't resist the absolute magnetism of his hand halfway up my ass. The other boys get jealous, and the biggest shoulders the other aside.
Never had a burner,
I say dozily to biggest.
We got 'em by the carton back at the fortress, he brags.
I try not to tongue my aching gums. A good part of my grey matter wants to melt his face right there, or maybe aim a little lower. Another part feels bad for the stupid bastard. He's pimply, not even in his 20s. He thinks he's something because he's got a gun and big hands and big shoulders. But the dumb fuck's never seen a Telemannus in war gear, or the Sovereign sitting there with a cup of tea and the weight of 10 billion on her. He's never seen Victor standing there like a god, giving life to a baby that'd change the world if he ever got the chance to grow. If the dumb bastard did have a notion of his true size, he'd crumple up and die for understanding how petrifyingly small he actually is. I know how small I am, but I also know how small they are. The last part of my grey matter, the most important part, is occupied with the idea of melting the guts out of Harmony, sawing her head off and feeding the rest of her to a fire. I'd have done it for Tyrion alone, and maybe felt guilty. But then her stimmed-up rapists had to ruin my sister too, had to butcher her children, cut them with sling blades like they were onions. Then they had to kill my pa when he couldn't even walk. Then they had to nail a baby to a tree. I don't give a piss if they're human, if they got problems, if they got drugs in them, if they had hard lives, if they got reasons. All I know is one has his hand digging into my backside, and I'm smiling, bearing it because I know I'm going to die. But I'm going to take as many of them with me as I can, and maybe, just maybe, find out if my friends are still alive. The big one leads me toward the old base, takes me around the shoulders, whispering so close I can smell the morning eggs and tobacco on his breath. His fingers graze my right tit. His boys saunter behind, half-ripe jealous, half-puffed up by his conquest. He steers me past the louses at the door and tries to pull me sidelong into some room where he'll rape me first and then share me like a half-done burner.
"Never been inside here,"
I coo loudly, in my best approximation of Maeve's accent.
"This is what it looks like. Sure, there were greys about once. Maybe golds. Bellona's, weren't they? I've always wanted to go to Olympia."
"Never mind about Olympia," he says. "It's a crow shithole now. In here's where the fun is."
But the noise has perked the ears of bigger dogs, and before he can pull me into the room, one of the picker's boys comes around the corner. He's got a metal arm, kind eyes, and a beautiful head of rusty hair.
"What you got there, Toro?"
"Oh, just a friend," Big Toro says, all meek-like. "None yours, Duncan."
"You know the fish are under Harmony's hand,"
the handsome man says. He sips his coffee, and those bright eyes of his look me over. He seems in his mid-20s. Cocky, but a kindness to him.
"Picker already got the tax,"
my idiot says, tilting me away protectively.
"This one's an old maid. Probably already got a canyon from 3, 4.
"You had little ones, miss?" Duncan asks me, polite-like.
"Not a one," I say.
"Husband?"
"Gone and died," I say.
"Clan you?"
"Beta."
"Omicron here."
He squints at me and smiles awkwardly.
"How many years?"
"Not but 20, I say.
He snorts.
"More like 24.
He tosses the dregs of his coffee on the floor and takes one step toward Toro, flicks his robot fingers, and the arm around my shoulders disappears. Toro gives me a good push.
"Take the slut," he mutters. "Probably got a dead cave anyhow."
Duncan politely tells me he's going to frisk me. He ain't nearly thorough enough. When he's done, he wipes the snow off my face, like he's bringing me to shelter. He leads me on into a bigger room that's got live computers and a few boys hunched over them. The pickers having breakfast of eggs and fish and pudding.
"What's what?"
he asks when Duncan brings me in. Picker is lean and fox-like, clever behind the eyes, and sinister as all hell.
"Fresh catch,"
Duncan says.
"Fresh? She's a relic."
"Might be, but seedless, so seems, and it's better than babies."
"Already got the tax. Toss her back."
"Them's kids," Duncan says. "You know it ain't right." Picker eats his eggs and stares at him.
"You said you didn't need a wife."
"She ain't for me. Some of them girls ain't even bled yet."
"So?"
"So it ain't right," Duncan says, setting his hands on his belt. Whoever he is, he's got some pull. Picker doesn't take it as a challenge, but the other boys are watching. Picker pushes his eggs away and lights a burner. Through the smoke, he appraises me.
"Spinner!"
I get spun. Do my best to show as much ankle as my sister did when she danced. I laugh lightly, as if I'm dizzy from it.
"You want a husband?" Picker asks me.
He's got the bad eyes of a cave fish. He has to squint to see me right. I look down, all shy.
"Long as he's a good one," I say. "I get to pick."
The men laugh.
"No, lass," Picker says. "You don't get to bloody pick. Head talk does that. Best blood gets top mare, and you ain't top mare, so you get what you get. Still want a husband?"
I nod.
"Better than smelling like fish day in, day out."
A great show is made of giving me a little plate of dry eggs as they discuss what to do with me. The eggs are tasteless, like everything else I've eaten since my spit boiled off my tongue. When I've scraped the last bit from my plate, Duncan leads me away to a room guarded by a couple lads. The smell of clustered bodies washes out as the door swings open. Near on 20 girls are nestled on old mattresses with dirty sheets, huddled together for fear.
"Which of you's the youngest?" Duncan asks.
A girl who couldn't be more than 11 points to a girl even smaller than her.
"Leah is."
A look of pain goes across Duncan's face as he kneels and motions her over.
"You want to go home to your family, little one?"
She nods, terrified. He extends a hand. She doesn't take it until the other girls prod her forward. Duncan guides me into the room and takes Leah out. The door slams shut behind me. Half the girls dead silent, staring at the stained sheets like they're reading palms. Others huddle together. With the boys gone, I look around in case there are plants. But if there are, they're good enough actors to be in the Hyperion Opera. The room stinks of fear. Not one of them older than me, and to scared girls, that means something. I cross my arms and say in a low whisper, "They're going to rape all of us until we have brood." They stare at me. "Then they'll do it again, and again and again, till your belly's like an empty water skin. Some of you will quit and take it. Rest of you, they'll hook on Greyline and you'll beg for prick just to get a high. They'll probably share those ones." I look around at the wide eyes. Some of the girls have started to bawl. "How many of you have husbands?" I ask. A freckle-faced girl in her early 20s raises her hand. She nudges another girl, a little younger with long pigtails, until the girl raises her hand too. "How many of you are aged north of 16? About half raise their hands. "How many of you had brothers or pas killed?" They all raise their hands. "How many had brothers or pas cry like babies as you were dragged away but didn't lift a bloody damn finger?" They stare at me, all too ashamed to raise their hands. The dead are honoured. The cowards are hidden. It's all the answer I needed. This is right. "Any of you rats?" I glare around at them. "Good. 'Cause where I'm from, rats get their eyes stabbed out." Some of the girls flinch. Freckles crosses her arms as if she'd like to see me try. The smallest of the girls, one with skin almost as dark as mine and a shaggy mane of hair, glares around at the other girls, daring them to be rats. Tails, the one with a husband, looks down. I reach back down my skirts and find the head of the strip of teeth. I jerk, wincing as the epoxy pulls off half my skin with it. Holding the strip in my hands, I pull the pliers from my shoe. With all of them watching, I stick the pliers in my mouth, secure the iron bits to my second back molar and jerk hard. The tooth doesn't come out straight, but I saw Victra plop out a baby standing up without a single yelp. I rock twice and jerk again, using both my arms. The blood pours down the back of my throat as the tooth and root burst out. I hold up the pliers, open my mouth so they all see, and then I swallow the blood. I take another one of Fig's teeth from my strip and shove it against the wound. There's a sizzle, a pain that shoots through the root, through my nostril, into my eyes and brain. It's the second I've put in. I wipe the blood from my lips and smile. Tails gives a little gasp. The rest of the girls look terrified, except Freckles, who tilts her head, and the little one with the mane. We'll call her Lion. She claps her hands together until Freckles shushes her. "I ain't from here. Where I'm from, these fucks killed me whole clan," I say. "I ain't here to be no brood sow. I ain't here to be no Greyline whore. I ain't here to be saved. I'm here to kill those bastards. Any of you sisters got similar intentions, You better speak up, or you're going to be a slag toy till you see the veil. I hold up the pliers. So who wants to save themselves? Little lion bounds forward. We swallow our pulled teeth so they don't find them hidden under the mattresses. After I explained what Fig's teeth do, Freckles got all but two of the girls to get in line. She held them down when I pulled the teeth and made sure they were quiet. One wailed so hard, the guards outside beat the door with their rifles. After their teeth were stripped, I secured each of Fig's devices myself, and Freckles helped Lion clean up their blood. I find out from the others that Lion is Mora, Breya's sister. Only Tails and another smaller girl refused my offer. I sit down next to Tails as Freckles cleans up the last girl. She's murmuring under her breath how we shouldn't do this, how they'll hurt us. I put an arm around her. Listen, you don't have to join in. All I need is you to be quiet, right? We'll get you home.
You're going to get us killed, she says. You're crazy.
Yeah, I say, realizing nice isn't going to work. Yeah, but you remember what I do to rats.
She stabs their eyes out,
Lion says from behind me. Her hands are balled into tiny fists as she glares at Tails.
She stabs their eyes out,
Freckles adds. Several of the girls repeat it around Tails until she covers her ears. I lean in front of her. Remember. I bring my finger to my lips.
Shh.
I leave as dramatically as I can, but a thought catches me. Can you read? I ask her. She shakes her head. And now I've got a backup plan. They collect us mid-morning when a rumble comes through the walls. A transport waits outside. Some of the relatives of the girls come to see them off. The rest hide from their own shame in their chores, making up the boats and chiselling snow off the roofs. Some of the girls cry as we're pushed onto the transport, but none as loud as poor Tails. Others tongue their gums till I shoulder them. Lion and Freckles glare at the red-hand militia as we board up. I slump forward and sit on the freezing metal bucket seat, keeping my eyes down as the door clamps shut. The guards don't chat much to us. They just smoke their burners. Some few women are with them. They think they're men, or at least they think they're better than us dumb sows because they've got guns and knives and pants and we're in skirts. A few of the girls are nauseous by the time the shuttle sets down. Freckles pukes a little in the corner. There aren't any windows, so the first time we get fresh air is in some cavern hangar that was carved ages back by claw drills. This is their fortress. After seeing the Citadel of Light, I almost laugh. Ambient light dies as we're led away into the main of the mine. Maybe I thought the Red Hand was something big back when I was in 121, but next to the Citadel Lion Guards or Barker Souls, and especially the Askamani, these louts are a joke. We spot maybe a couple hundred as we are led down an ancient grav lift into the township. A few boys whistle at us as we go. A few run up and pinch our cheeks before getting clouted by Picker and Duncan, who smiles at us as if being nice will save him from bad dreams. They dump us in some old barracks for greys. Everything's rusted except the small sad affectations they added for the sake of us women folk. There are beer bottles with wildflowers, HCs playing old comedies, and a couple old hens who introduce themselves and inspect our armpits. They check our teeth for cavities, and when they see our irritated gums, they murmur to themselves about gum disease. Then they bring in an old yellow man with a limp to check between our legs for lice and other maladies, as if we're the ones who'll have them. It's all I can do not to crumple the yellow skull with a beer bottle when the cold forceps spread me so he can look inside. He pats me gently on the knee and looks at me in sorrow. When we're done, and I'm confirmed not diseased, They let us alone with the other newcomers from other towns along the coast. No one mingles. Freckles eyes the other girls like intruders. I see Tails taking a step toward them and click my tongue. She stops and stares at the ground. They give us a precious pack of burners for being honourable lasses and treat it like it's Venusian chocolate. The girls look like idiots smoking them down. Most have never even had tobacco. A few puke. I take the burner from Lion's fingers and tear it apart.
How old are you even? I ask.
11. Going on 40, Freckles says. She's crazy, that one. I ain't crazy, Lion protests. You's the one in love with a grey.
Of the other girls, she seems to respect only Freckles' opinions. I raise an eyebrow at Freckles. Greys are risky business.
So mind your own. When are we going to do it? She asks.
Like I said, when they pair us off, we'll be alone then and able to get their guns. Make sure the other girls remember.
We've got to wait that long.
She glances back at Tails.
Nona, since I was 5, she's going to tell them soon as we split up, soon as we can't see a rat.
You know that for a certain fact? I ask.
Well as I know anything.
I glance at Tails, who sits in the corner by herself. Freckles is right. She watches the two hens chatting with each other on the far side of the room. Make a distraction for me, I tell Freckles.
What are you going to do?
Fix it. She's about to press for particulars when Lion, who was eavesdropping, screams at the top of her lungs and runs for the hallway. The hens curse and pursue. I bolt up. Only the girls in the room now. I slip toward Tails. She looks up as I approach. I kick her hard as I can in the jaw. Something pops. She sprawls sideways with a cry. I can't take chances, so I pull back the hands covering her face and try to stomp on her jaw. Finally, my heel gets through and her hands go a little slack. I stomp again until I hear the bone crack like wet wood. I wheel back around, locking eyes with the staring girls. I don't like rats, I say. The newcomers look away. My girls are horrified. I return to Freckles and sit back down, throbbing all over. Tails sobs through her broken jaw like she's dying.
Shit, Freckles mutters. What you got against rats?
Her smile sours till her face mirrors mine as we listen to Tails moan until the hens come back. They drag a crying Lion by her ears. No one sits within 10 meters of Tails. The hens demand to know what happened. After seeing what I did to Tails, the girls greet the question with ominous silence. Tails's explanation comes out as a pathetic moo. She'll live, but she won't be talking for a while. Stupidity is not a victimless crime. I won't let these girls pay for her big mouth. The hens feed us after the burners and make us each drink a cup of bitter wine, making sure it all goes down. It's got something in it. I feel the buzz right off, a slow warmth and wooziness. The whole time they're talking about what an honour we're about to receive. Freckles glowers as they feed Lion the same size of cup they gave us. They line us up in a big room like dolls. I think it's around night time. Hard to tell because the mind's shut off from light. Didn't feel this as a girl. Days had rhythm in Lagaluce. Could tick the clock on paper by the measure of my mother's sounds and smells. Door creak, 5 in the morning. Coffee smell, 5:20. Click of tin breakfast plates, 5:30. Here there's no rhythm, because there's no life. Just like the cell. Can already tell there's too many young men and not enough to distract them or keep them loyal. If the obsidians are tearing them apart bad, as everyone says, then they must be wondering why they're fighting, why they're not trying to make it in the city like sane people. This ain't the Red Hand we feared.
I don't need the parasite to smell the decay. Is it right to risk these girls? Is it better if they just take it and survive? If I can't find Volga and Victra, if they can't somehow help us, I think I just signed the death notes for nearly 20 girls. But it's too late to go back. We wait in the lines in a big cold room where mine tinpots used to practice their shooting. The burning of candles and the carpets they've put down on the floor can't obscure the old purpose of the room or the holes bullets chewed in the far wall. We wait till my lower back starts to ache and Lion starts to whistle to the annoyance of the hens. One smacks her ear. Lion just grins up at her. Then Picker comes in, with Duncan trailing behind him, and tells us to mind our manners, to be polite, to curtsy, because we're about to meet the Red Mother herself, maker of the Red Hand, sister of Ares, Nerol O'Lycos. But the Reaper's uncle wasn't Ares, and all the girls know it. Another 10 minutes. Then some mean, mean bastards come in and face us down like a firing squad, but they don't have that many guns. Most are men, a few women, not boys like the others, but hard and rangy and evil, with eyes like pickers, and a quietness about them that's so inhuman, I think all the girls will shit themselves and spill our plans. Good thing I took out the rat. Then she comes in. The woman has filled my nightmares from the bunks of the Telemannus estate to the freezing holes I slept in next to Volga and Victra. The woman who made red butter of Tyrion's head. Who I remembered ruining my family every time Volga taught me to strip down her rifle. My fingers would shake from the cold, from the fear of the pursuing hunters. But all I had to do was picture her face to remember why I wanted to learn Volga's weapons. Harmony's face is half hell, half faded beauty. And she was a beauty. There's lines there now. Sour crow's feet. But in her time, she would have outstripped my sister by a kilometre. She would have made the boys beg for a twirl of the skirts. Harmony stalks forward now with a weird, lazy carelessness that I've only seen in soldiers. No preening, no boasting, just a slump of the shoulders and a forward trajectory. She looks at us. Then she smiles with her eyes, a brilliant, incandescent loveliness that makes me tilt my head, wondering if I got it all wrong, or am I that drunk? Sisters! Harmony says, before rushing forward to greet us, going down the line, cupping our faces, kissing us on the foreheads, on the mouths, on the eyes. Sisters, she says, sisters, tonight you receive an honour most red women only dream of. Tonight you will be chosen as wives by heroes of the red people. How fearful you must be, standing here on the precipice of a life more glorious than you could know. There was life before this, the life you thought you had, that they trained you to be accustomed to, the life you thought was your destiny. That life was a lie. The life of a slave is no life. And there is this life, the true life, the second life of liberation, the life not of clan, but of the people. One people united against oppression, united against the cruelty of the slavers who once called us by numbers, and those who still seek to shackle us. She sees a girl crying, not one of mine. I know you're fearful. I feared once. I feared when my children were dying of a cancer of the lung. I prayed to the Reaper for them, the real Reaper who guards the veil, not the man who turned his back on his people. I prayed to the Reaper to judge them innocent and lovely and keep them in this world. But the Reaper sorts only the just and the pure in the next life. I prayed and prayed,
But who was there to answer my prayers in this life? Who was there to save my children? No one. They died. She scoops a handful of dirt and lets it trickle out her clenched fist. I watched them wither. I watched my husband wither after them. I watched the sons of Ares wither, not to death, but to the temptations of this world. She discards the dirt. When I was afraid, I always prayed as you pray. But no one is there to answer. Our salvation comes in the next world. We must make our own in this one. That is why the Red Hand fights. She looks at each one of us, eyes lingering on Lion. She smiles down at her. Lion does not smile back. You are the bravest of our people. You do not hold weapons. You do not fight. But you carry the banner of liberty. She looks at Freckles. The girl can't meet her gaze. You carry the bloodline of our people. Without women, without wives, what are a people but a doomed matchstick? To blaze and glare light, and then to die. She looks at me. It is the hardest thing I have ever done to hold her gaze and nod. But I do. But you are the wildfire, the fire that spreads. Without guns, without ships, you are the soldiers that bring us the future. You are the wives of Red. I envy you. She nods so convincingly. I envy you. If I could still bring life into this world, I would not need this. She rests her hand on her pistol. But we all have our duty. Mine is to protect you. If your husband beats you, if he is cruel to you, come to me, or any of the women you see here today, and we will sort it. Duncan takes a swig from his flask and stares at the ground in the line of Red Hand militia. But the Red Hand women with Harmony nod, brainwashed, pathetic, or evil. I hate them so much more than the men. Many of the girls, especially the newcomers, find themselves nodding too. Either they buy the bullshit, or are drunk, or afraid, or wanting the approval of the older women. Most of my lot stand rigid or shake with fear, not because they're smarter than the other girls, but because we have a plan. And once they've grasped the wheel, tiny as it may be, they feel they have control. They have a chance. I know, because it wasn't Victra who saved me from the Askamani, or from getting sucked out her ship. Volga and I did that. It made me feel alive in a way I never had. One day you may hold a weapon, Harmony promises. But today your duty to your people is to bear the seed of your husband to fruition, to grow our union with new blood and foster boys that will become warriors, girls that will become wives and one day warriors as well. I salute you. You are the best of our kind. May the veil wait for you, and may the blood of our people flow strong.
Chapter 69 Lyria The Child Wives. The sound of zithers wails through the concrete halls as we're led in a line down to the township common, where several hundred bearded men and boys with smears for whiskers laugh and drink at long tables. Some few fighter women join them, hair done short like the men. Oil fires burn in metal barrels. Boys race men to see the bottom of their mugs. The stolen wealth of other races decorates their coats. Gold sigils clatter as they laugh. Obsidian arm talks encircle the necks of their child wives. The richer they are, the less the women can move. They look like birds sitting at their tables, set back from the fighters, gossiping or staring at the cups before them, wishing what's inside would numb them faster. The men cheer as we're brought in, but it's short-lived. It all becomes solemn as we're lined up in another row of dolls. Girls stare at their feet. Some brave ones, like Freckles, look on ahead like they're at the gallows. Harmony takes her place of honour at the head table. Mugs are slammed in unison, making a mockery of the fading dirge, until she raises her hands and quiets all. I scan the township levels, trying to piece it all together and figure where they keep Victra and Volga. "Hail the children," she says. "Hail the wives, but above all, hail the fighters," Harmony calls. "Coran O'Boisha!" The men roar and slam their mugs. "For the killing of 5 obsidian barbarians and the taking of 40 torques in the highlands, you are a boy no more. It's time a wife made a man of you. The prime pick is yours." A drunken man-boy, uncommonly tall and handsome, except for the case of childhood pox, manages to stand straight under a barrage of backslaps and jeering. With a shy grin, he makes his way down the line, glancing at each of our faces, passing mine without pausing, until he comes to Freckles. She almost cracks her tooth then and there. He bows unsteadily and extends a crumpled haemonthus. I wince as she glances back at me. One of the hens comes behind her and, pinching the small of her back so the men can't see, whispers in her ear. Freckles takes the haemonthus, hand shaking so badly she nearly drops it. The fighters roar in approval as Dagan takes her hand and they walk to an empty table and sit. He pours her ale and downs half a mug himself. 16 times the choosing ritual is repeated, until Duncan tucks a flask away and whispers to Picker. Picker cackles and shoves him forward. "Duncan Osiris has finally dropped his balls. He wants a lass. What do you say, mother?" Harmony snorts. "He waited long enough. Go on, lad." Only 3 of us remain. Old hag me, Lion, and a plump newcomer. Duncan takes a haemonthus from the barrel, walks straight up to me and offers it. I almost forget to take it. Lion is picked last by a man of 50. Even some of the red hands watch him with disdain as he leads his child wife away. The farce of a ceremony is a blur. Whatever they gave us in the wine took a bit to start. It numbed me at first, but now it creeps on little cat feet as we stand together between the braziers and some man babbles on about duty or some such. Many of the words are the same I heard when my sister married. Feel a little sick hearing them now. My hands clutching dirt with Duncan's, both wrapped together by a blood-stained cloth woven by the wife slaves. He's shifting nervously foot to foot, his early confidence in shambles for some reason. I watch the acrid black smoke from the braziers weave upward to the roof of the mine. All this is a lie. All this pretending the world ain't changing. I was jealous of my sister, but I never wanted a husband, not me. Maybe I thought I wanted one, but that was just because it said something that I didn't have one, that I got skipped over at wed age. I feel sick inside that it happens like this. I repeat some words that I can't remember, even as my mouth's saying them. That wine's something fierce. The other girls are like warm dolls, wavering there with all the steadiness of riverside cattails. I'm wondering if it was a good idea to give them the teeth. How many will yellow out? How many will rattle me soon as they get their wits? Tails can't be the only coward. Maybe the wine's good. Makes them slow and easy instead of twitchy and fearful. I still got to find the big girls. Fortunately, the men are nearly as drunk as we are, especially Duncan. For courage? For fear? For weakness? Fuck knows.
Maybe they're just tired of getting butchered by obsidians. Some swill and new cunny must be the Vale itself after fighting Seffi's beasts. The few amongst the hand who ain't drunk are the old boys, grisly lechers who are corner looking out their eyes at their wives. I want to retch knowing what Lion's old man is thinking. Did any of them rape my sister? Did Duncan? I look over at him. He's so young, so handsome, so vile. I know the marriage is done when there's a cheer. For all his smiles and earlier politeness, Duncan gives me about 2 seconds before I feel his cold tongue probing between my clamped lips. I let him in and he sticks it almost to the back of my throat, cupping my ass with his hands. He smells of shit tobacco and bitter swill and body odour and mint. He sighs into me, hungry. That was quick. Then it's celebration. Women hug me, men hug me. I'm passed about like one of the clan, like I'm not a sow whore they stole from her people. Then there's dancing. Duncan is popular with the men. He twirls me and probes my body like he owns it. Nausea comes in a tide. Fearing I'll retch, I pat Duncan on the chest and stumble over to a table and sit hunched and feeling the world swooping around me. A blur of faces flicker past, all laughing and gay. I want to crawl under the table. I want to hide until the world doesn't feel like some spinning kaleidoscope of horror. But a stone-cold realization sets on me that if I do that, if I curl up, if I stay seated, I'll end up waking in a tangle of sheets in a stone home like the one I grew tall in, except I won't be hearing my mother in the morning. I'll be hearing Duncan snoring drunkenly and feeling the taste of stale liquor in my mouth like old plums and the sore ache of my maidenhead split. It ain't the parasite telling me I gotta move. I gotta be smart. I gotta find Volga and Victra. The parasite is quiet, though no longer contained to just my head. I feel its tendrils inside me, like roots along my bones. What does it want? If it weren't damaged, what could it do? Wondering that won't save me here. What would Ephraim do? How would he find the big girls? I force myself to stand. Am I standing? I'm numb, but my feet are on the ground. Duncan's on his knees, taking swill from a big gourd as men chant. I stumble to him. He coughs liquor as I pull at him, and he puts his hand on my ass. Dance with me, I think I say. Soon we're dancing, so I must have said it. Colours and hair and tassels flicker past. Amongst the laughing faces, I see a girl. Is it Freckles? She stares at the ground as her husband twirls her and laughs. Duncan's hot against me. I feel his rank breath on my neck, the sweat from his forehead against mine. He grinds against me, and I feel his manhood hard against my thigh. It ain't that big a wedding, I say. What you mean? He asks. My darling disappointed. I thought the Red Hand was an army. It is an army, he cries. Legions deep. We're all over Samaria, don't you know? No war talk for my wife's lips. Dance with me. I let him twirl me, and I hold back a surge of vomit that squirrels up my throat. He pins me against him as the music slows. It's not an army, I say, all spoiled like. Just a gaggle. A gaggle, he crows. We've been hit hard, sure, but there's more brothers deep here and 2 more mines.
Doing what? Drinking?
Nah, some's mining, some's training, some's guarding the prisoners. You know the gold hiding in your village?
I thought there was an obsidian, too.
Huge one. Wouldn't believe your eyes. Big as the Reaper himself. She's not. Got her with the others. I prod him a little. Caught some coldies in the plains. Harmony put them to work in the deep tunnels, clearing pit vipers and hauling ore.
Tamed obsidians. I heard it all now. I don't believe you.
It's true.
Prove it, then.
He's drunk enough to consider it. I grind my hips against his manhood.
I'll let you show me something else if you show me the coldies. Never seen one before.
I play with the whiskers of his beard.
I thought you'd show me a whole new life.
That does it. Duncan steers me through the throng and grabs a growler of swill for the trip. I pour at him, a new notion coming to me.
Shouldn't we bring the lads some?
What lads?
The lads guarding the coldies.
He grins. That's a fine consideration. Grabbing a couple growlers of swill, we stumble away from the party. I'm glad I asked for the tour, despite the toll. The trip is not short, nor is it innocent. Duncan pulls me drunkenly and pins me twice against a tunnel wall as we go down. Each time I roll the back of my knuckles against his manhood and say, "Soon, my love." I make sure to remember each of the turns. 20 steps down the third tunnel, first right. 100 steps down the ladder. Gods, the drug they put in the wine is strong. I feel like I'm wading through melting butter by the time we hit the grav lift down to the mines. Duncan pukes in the corner and wipes his lips, laughing as he washes his mouth out with swill from the growler. As he retches again, I quickly strip the hemanthus he pinned to my dress and grind it into the mouths of the open growlers we carry for the boys. By the time he's wiping his mouth, I've put the corks back in. I don't think he saw. The grav lift spits us out into a dark cavern lit by glow lamps. The grinding racket of drills mauls my ears as we stumble together toward the mining teams. When I visited my father's drill team, I remember feeling wonder as I saw how important he was. A provider, a real man that I got to bring lunch to. It seemed so exciting back then. But this pit is infernal. Wet heat suffocates everything. The noise is unbearable. Men mill about the top of a tunnel where down deep a claw drill burrows into Mars. Red, evil light glows up from the pit. Haulbacks dump hissing haul tubes of helium-3 on the lip of the mine and rappel back down. Chain gangs of slaves heft the loads in metal backpacks and take them down another tunnel. There must be hundreds of them. Red hand men rove along the chain gang lines with scorchers and pikes that glisten with electricity at the tips. Duran, my husband calls to a sweating red man with a gut the size of Samaria. The man shoves a boy with a hairless face out of the way and comes to give Duncan a hug. A man now, I hear, Duran rumbles. Is this the wee lass who's done the deed? I scored well, Duncan mumbles. All the other blossoms are stumbling drunk, and my sweetheart here wanted to bring you poor night shifters some evening swill. He leans in. And get a look at the coldies. That's a lass, Duran says. You did well. He thumps him on the shoulder, and we hand over our growlers. I hope they can't taste the hemanthus. With the heat down here, I doubt they'll gainsay anything cold. Duran asks me a question. I mumble a sweet reply and curtsy. I tip over, and the men help me up, laughing. Dusting my skirts, I pout and scan the line of slaves. There's oranges, reds, browns, a half-dead blue, greys, but no obsidians.
Duncan promised me coldies.
Can't let Duncan fall flat already, Duran says. He bellows at his men to bring up one of the ice bitch teams. Several minutes pass. Then I hear a clattering. A team of 12 obsidians, locked together with heavy iron chains, shuffles forward, driven by several men with stun pikes. Warrior race my ass, Duran says. They even got a queen now. But who's your king, bitch? He pokes one of the obsidians with his pike. The tall woman grunts and glares at him. Her body is covered with winged symbols. Duncan, there's the one you got yourself. Duran points to a hunched woman covered in grime and stunpike burns. Volga.
It's barely been 2 days since I've seen her, but she looks as if it's been 5 years. Her bare feet are bloody and shaking against the cavern floor. Her face is obscured by her hair, but her eyes stare distantly at the feet of Duran.
Oh, they're so dreadful, like idiot bears, I say.
At the sound of my voice, Volga looks up. She allows only a bare glimmer of recognition. I touch my head as though faint.
Oh, there's evil in those bottles, Duncan.
Volga's eyes dart to the growlers Duran has passed to his men.
I feel faint. Take me out of this heat.
All right, coldies. Back to work. Zoo's over.
Duran shouts at her and sticks her in the side with his pike. She grunts and trudges on, 1 foot after the other. Before she disappears back into the mouth of the tunnel, she glances back at me and gives the barest of nods. The party is still in full swing by the time Duncan and I stumble back. Some hard-eyed reds loiter around the fringes. They've got pistols on their hips. That's not good. I smile at one, and he doesn't smile back. Soon they'll start taking the girls back. I want to be first, else I might not get as free a roam of the place. I still have to find Victra.
I don't want to dance anymore, I say to Duncan. But the lads will wonder where I've gone, he says. Did I marry a dead stone?
I reach my hand to his manhood and feel a minor swell.
I don't want to dance anymore.
Duncan's home is not grand. I might have thought it so had I not seen Hyperion, and he thinks it so because he hasn't. He proudly shows it off like it wasn't abandoned by the people that did live here. It's big enough for a family of 6. A small kitchen with trophies on the wall, which he boasts on about until I pull him toward a bedroom. He sits on the edge of the bed and looks at me nervously. The music from the party is a whisper through the stone.
It's too dark, I say.
So he searches for a glow lamp. When he finally finds it, he turns back, nervous, and pats the bed beside him. I sit. Maybe I can talk with him. Maybe he can help us. He knows this is wrong.
This ain't your home, I say, regarding his search for the lamp.
He shakes his head.
Where is your home?
Don't have one anymore. Rat War made sure of that.
He plays with the edge of my skirt.
And you? You ain't one of the fish.
Lagerlos.
I wait for a sense of recognition, but there ain't one.
How long you been with the hand?
He rubs his neck, reminded of something he'd rather forget.
3 years, I'd reckon.
Take off your dress? It sounds almost like I have a choice.
Please?
I stand up and go to move the shoulders of my dress.
3 years, eh?
I run my tongue against Fig's molar as he frowns at me.
Take it off, he says more aggressively.
Why?
Because you're my wife.
Why?
Because I...
He drunkenly searches for an answer.
I picked you. Listen, I want to be kind about this, but...
Makes 2 of us. I sigh.
Sometimes kind just ain't in the cards.
He rises from the bed, quicker than he looks, and grabs the back of my head to stick his tongue in my mouth. I let it worm there until he's distracted by his own pawing of my body. He looks down at my skirt so he can lift them, and his fingers are trying to find my insides between my legs when I pop the molar. There's a flood of liquid into my mouth. It is hot at first, but then grows cold as ice.
DNA calibration complete. V7 anti-personnel system ready for deployment, the parasite says from within. I wondered how Fig kept it from melting her own flesh. I think one thing as I stroke Duncan's face, and he looks up at me, mouth open, eyes closed, tongue wet and probing.
This will be loud,
I shove him in the chest. He stumbles over the edge of the bed and half falls. I grab a pillow and spit the acid from my mouth, taking care to only get his stomach and legs. It splashes over him. Nothing happens. He frowns in confusion, lunges upward, knowing something is wrong, grabs my throat with his metal arm. Then the acid activates. First go his clothes. He smells the smoke, glances down, and screams bloody murder as the acid eats into his skin. His fingers bruise the muscles of my neck, but I don't bother trying to breathe. He'll let go soon enough. I shove the pillow against his face as he goes on screaming. The sound muffles, and I push at him to keep the acid from spreading from his gut and legs to me. Sure enough, he lets go my throat and scrambles back from me, thrashing as the acid eats into his intestines and thighs. Pools of red muscle bubble, and soon I see bone. I keep after him, rushing around him to keep the pillow over his face as he tangles himself in the sheets from his thrashing. "There's a neutralizing agent," I hiss into his ear. "Tell me where the gold is and I'll use it." I pull the pillow from his face. He tries to scream out for help, but I shove it back down before he can. "How are they going to treat you if you've got no legs? They don't got replacements, I wager. You'll be a freak, a crawling, leaking freak. Talk fast or you'll have nubs, old boy." I pull back the pillow.
"Can, for fourth level, we sealed her in the old jail. But make it stop. Make it stop."
I pat my dress. "Sorry, must have left it in my pants." I push the pillow over Duncan's mouth as the acid eats on. I don't know why, but I leave his eyes uncovered so he can watch me watch him die. Just feels right. The acid is something mean. In less than a minute, it eats through his intestines, then his spinal column as well as his legs. Soon he's dead. I've got one tooth left. I stand over his corpse, slapping myself, trying to shake off the stupor of that damn wine. There's no shaking it off, it seems. They drugged us good. I hope I got the reds in the mines just as bad. How long will it take for them to start teetering? For Volga to get a hold of one of their pikes? How many of the girls will have had the guts to use the teeth? That's the real concern. Freckles and Lion, sure. But the rest? I didn't think of the timing. With as many Red Hand men as I've seen around here, they'll be butchered unless I free Victra. I gotta move. I search Duncan's body and strip his pistol, making sure the railgun's magazine is fitted right. Scouring the house, I find a well-worn pulse rifle and an obsidian axe. I leave the axe and try to recall how Volga taught me to prep a rifle as we schlepped through the highlands. I get it wrong twice before relaxing and letting my hands remember on their own. The rifle makes a droning sound as it signals it is ready. Lovely. Rifle shouldered, pistol tucked into my skirts, I head out the front door. 6 Red Hands stand waiting for me on the walkway outside. Tails shivers amidst them. She points at me with a finger, mumbling something inaudible. Shit. Chapter 70. Lyria. Thunderbottle. I strain against the rope that ties me to the mess hall table as the blood-crusted hammer hits my pinky. Pain explodes in my head. My stupor shatters into 1,000 pixels. I reel back, gasping for air. The bones busted. The skin's swelling and trickles of blood are leaking around the dent the hammer made. Harmony twirls the hammer and leans back. Several more of her boys prowl around the old grey mess hall. They don't seem to mind Duncan's dead. I could spit the last tooth in her face right now, but it's not just my life I'd be trading. "I'm waiting for your answer, girl," she says. "You got 9 more fingers, 10 toes, 2 tits, 1 cunny, and then we get creative. How'd you kill Duncan?" I do nothing.
because I've been prisoner enough times to know doing something gets you hit again. I hid a flask of acid in my shoe. Your boys didn't check my shoes. Why not? You tell me. They're your idiots. And you just happened to have acid on you. It's war, ain't it? Fun things floating around. Why'd you kill him? The woman seems to be expecting me to spout some ideology or whimper about how unfair it is. Harmony's evil creeps along my spine as I meet eyes with her and shrug. Figure she only likes one kind of person. Don't need a husband. She surprises her men with a laugh. A door creaks and she looks up. Picker, she says. Just the man I wanted to see. He goes rigid, glancing at the other men, at the hammer. What's what, boss? What's what is that upstairs, poor Duncan's guts are melted through. She looks at me with a little smirk. Marriage ain't for everyone, but when I ask for breeders, it ain't so I can lose fighters, is it, Picker? No. No what? No, mother. I'll kill a right Picker. You owe me one breathing fighter, not a dead breeder. She twirls her hammer. Don't you? He eyes the hammer and nods. I got this stomach thing right, this ulcer that just burns all through the night. Hard enough to keep sleep with it gnawing into me. Now I gotta try and sleep fearful my men can't even sniff out a gamma. Her eyes flick to me. So this is it then. My tongue finds the molar. I can smell a pet rat through water. The stink. She breathes deep. So many old memories. But watch her lie through those rat teeth, boys. Watch her try to slink in with us. She taps the table with her hammer. What clan are you, lass? I look her in those eyes, with plans to melt them out of her skull. My name is Lyria. I am the last gamma of Largalos. Largalos, Harmony replies, searching for the memory. Camp 121. It was an easy cleanse. Almost got a Telemannus for the effort. You killed my family. Their names were... Before I can finish, she slams the hammer down on my left index finger. I see flashes of white from the sudden pain and hear a scream. But it ain't mine. Harmony looks over my shoulder. I twist my head around. One of her men wobbles in through the open door, half-melted neck and torso leaking blood. He pitches forward onto the other man at the door. The man catches him and then starts to scream, holding up his hand as the acid begins to eat it too. How many of you are there? Harmony shouts at me. She slaps me so hard, I lose track of my efforts to open the molar. By the time I collect myself, she's up and out of her chair. I missed my chance. Harmony unbuckles her pistol as she hears more screaming from the township. She tosses her hammer to Picker. Find out how many others there are. Rest of you, with me. Picker stares at the door as it slams behind them, muffling the distant screams. Then he turns with a hateful look, twisting his face. You dumb slant! Throwing me under to the boss! He gets real close to my ear and runs the hammer over my lips. That's a bad lass. He sits on the edge of the table. Now, I'm not saying I was fond of Duncan. Fact is, this job's got me a little pinned, and he was making some moves, you know. But, he taps the table with the hammer, man's got his orders. He leers in my face. The broken veins of his nose look like Hyperion traffic arteries this close. You weren't exactly a looker before, but if you don't tell me how many girls you got pissing acid, well, not even the dead'd kiss you. I don't want to waste my tooth on him. And I don't have to. Behind Picker, a red girl opens the door and slips through. It is Freckles. One hand rubs at a dark stain on the right side of her dress. She did it then.
The other hand is hidden in its right pocket. Her hair is tangled, and her face maintains its dazed expression when she sees what's happening. She draws her right hand out from her pocket to reveal a tarnished pistol.
"Shoot him," I say.
The colour drains from Picker's face as he turns to see the young woman he collected not a day ago, now holding a gun on him from 5 paces. His hand reaches out.
"Careful with that big iron, lass. You could hurt someone."
He takes a step forward.
"Just set it down right."
The pistol shakes in her hand.
"Shoot him," I shout.
Picker takes another step forward, hesitating when he sees her finger stiffen on the trigger.
"Think of all the times Gamma did your blood wrong," he says. "All the time your sibs were sick. How fat they got getting those boxes, while you sat with a bowl of sludge. That's a Gamma right there."
Freckles blinks as he gestures to me.
"Course she wants to get your hands dirty for her. But you ain't bad blood. Just set..."
The gun flashes. It's a small calibre, so his head only seems to lose its regular dimensions when the bullet goes into it. Picker doesn't fall. He seizes, gasping like a driller with rust lung. She shoots him again, this time in the chest. He flops down and lies twitching with his eyes open.
"Is he dead?"
she asks.
"Well, he ain't talking," I say.
She shudders in horror.
"Freckles. Hey, lass.